Welcome, one and all. Konnichiwa. Wow. Yes, welcome. I hope you had a wonderful holiday season. It's time to wake up, embrace 2018, and realize that Asian cult cinema is where you want to be. Hi, my name's Mao. This is, of course, the Radio St. Pete exclusive Asian cult cinema, in where I, yours truly, Mao, talks a little bit about Asian cult cinema and muses upon its influence. And it's... I can't even finish that sentence. It's so dumb. Anyway, yeah. So, you know, picked out a pretty interesting movie to talk about this week. 1968's Kill, with an exclamation mark behind it. K-I-L-L, exclamation mark. This is a very, very interesting movie. I got it off... I got a box set many years ago from the Criterion Collection called Rebel Samurai. What does it say? 60s swordplay classics. There are some very truly classics in there. I always like the Criterion Collection. The Criterion releases of stuff. They're very... they're cared for. You know, there's a lot of interesting stuff. I think it's the best possible examples that you get when you buy the Criterion stuff. Well, I mean, they still are getting actually getting money for DVDs and Blu-rays, where the rest of the world has kind of fallen off. In this box set, it's Samurai Rebellion, Sword of the Beast, which is a incredible movie, Samurai Spy, and Kill. I have yet to watch Samurai Spy. Stay tuned. That'll be coming up in your future and mine very soon. But anyway, I chose for this week Kill. And this is kind of an interesting story in that the director, Kihachi Okamoto, I'm very sorry if I mispronounced that, Mr. Okamoto, he was known for a lot of really, really intense samurai films. Really intense, like, really, you know, the swordplay. Sword of Doom was one that I just love. Samurai Assassin. You know, his list kind of goes on and on and on of these really incredible, influential, powerful samurai dramas. But this one is much different tone. Kill from 1968 is basically, it's not a complete comedy, but it is very, it's a parody of the samurai genre and the samurai movies that came before it. But it's not like Airplane in that it's pointing its finger and laughing at it, you know, like, but it's just kind of a little bit tongue-in-cheek at parts, some parts where it's just like poking fun at it because of what happened to it, because of how the samurai genre is viewed. You know, it's much like the gunfighters of the West. They've been romanticized to a point where you're like, well, that can't be true, you know. And the same is with samurai and ninja and all these, the knights of, you know, of England. These are humans. Now, you know, over the years, the stories get grander and the characters become, you know, cartoons of themselves. You know, the reality is these are just people. Yes, I'm sure there was some very good samurai that were very honorable to the code and that kind of thing. And I'm sure there's some gunfighters that were incredible shots and very fast and all that kind of stuff. But the reality we're presented in this kind of stuff at this day and age is obviously just no more than, you know, diluted drunken tales that have been passed down through the bar rooms and now presented in either as novels or pulp fiction. Not the movie Pulp Fiction, but, you know, Pulp Fiction in that people wrote about it and, you know, grandiose style. But this one is, it's a really high quality, it's a well-made movie, of course, you know. Sword of the Beast is one that jumps out at me that was just such a, I don't want to say a dark tale, but, you know, very, very, you know, when you watch that, you kind of go, you know, Sword of Doom was another one like that. Which was, which was Okamoto. You know, for someone who loves Japanese and Japan and all that kind of stuff so much, I sure do butcher it. I kind of butcher the English language, too, so I don't want anyone to take offense. I am just a baka gaijin walking the earth trying to talk about Asian cult cinema. Okamoto himself was belonged to a generation that's called, I'm cribbing this from the wonderful IMDb, he belonged to the generation where most of them got killed. That's an odd title to belong to, but whatever. He was part of the Great War, if there is such a thing as a Great War. And, he was in the South Pacific during Japan's war in World War II, and he survived, but that obviously dramatically shaped his, cynicism, or not cynicism, but the realization that nothing good comes of war no matter what, and that's portrayed in a lot of his movies. A lot of his samurai tales are like that, where, there is no glorious battle. Death is death, killing is killing, and that's all there is to it. But he started out doing a lot of the gangster pictures that were really hot in the 50s at Toho. And then he branched off into some of this stuff, some of the, the samurai movies, and he's done a lot of other stuff too. This isn't the Okamoto show. Just wanted to give a little bit of a background, cause he does have a very interesting take on it. He always kind of shows, struggle. It's not some of those slasher films, especially the 60s samurai stuff, it's almost like Dirty Harry with a sword, and it's just like, oh, don't bother about any, there's no repercussions, just look how awesome it is, and you kill everybody and run through everyone with a sword. And that's not really the reality anyway, either. This was, the Kill is a Toho release, so, obviously, he's, after the gangster stuff, he was able to keep doing some stuff for them. There's only subtitles. There's no dubbed version. Words, oh my god. There's no dubbed version, so basically, if you want to watch Kill, you're going to read it. That's okay for this kind of a movie. I'm not sure I wanted to hear some Australians chew on a accent, fella. And for this one, some of these are a little bit too, you would lose too much. Some of that slight parody, slight cynicism comes through when you're listening to their voices, and you're listening to them actually, the original actors, which some purists really think you should watch all of them like that. I'm not one of those. Some of those kung fu movies, I don't need to read them. I'm not really missing any real groundbreaking stuff. They're fun. A lot of them are fun and funny. Just you just don't need. I just don't need the to read some of them. But I digress. Oh my god. Okay, let me get into this story a little bit. We're going to take a quick trailer break, and I'm going to see if some coffee will wake my brain and my mouth up so they are, they're both connected. I think I'm still on holiday, and that's no good. Not when you turn the mic on, it isn't. All right, we'll be right back.
Hey, want to hear the most annoying sound in the world?
There are only two things I can't stand in this world. People who are intolerant of other people's cultures, and the Dutch.
On a mysterious island in the South China Sea, there is a fortress without walls, protected by an invincible army that needs no ordinary weapons. This is Enter the Dragon, the first martial arts film produced by a major Hollywood studio. John Saxon, U.S. Karate Champion Jim Kelly, Black Belt Hall of Fame superstar Bruce Lee penetrate the secret chambers of Han's evil empire, discover its secret, and destroy. This is Enter the Dragon, where the world's greatest martial arts athletes meet the ultimate challenge with the most ancient and deadly of weapons, the human body. Enter the Dragon. From Warner Brothers, rated R. Under 17, not admitted without parent.
All right, you hayseeds, it's a stick up. Everybody freeze. Everybody down on the ground.
Well, which is it, young feller? You want I should freeze or get down on the ground? I mean to say, if I freeze, I can't rightly drop. And if I drop, I'm going to be in motion. You see?
Shut up!
Okay, then.
Okay, now we are off and ready. Coffee has been drank. We're good to go. So basically, Kill, we have two main characters who are Ronin, basically a masterless samurai. They kind of, one at a time, they wander into this dusty spaghetti western setting. in Japan. It's Japanese, but it basically lends very heavily from the wind-blown ghost town setting. And each one of them comes in, we have Genta, who is a former samurai, and he's now a Yakuza member. He's the second one that comes in. The first one, then we also have Hanji, who is the first one we're introduced to, comes into this town. He's a farmer who sold everything he owns to afford his samurai swords. Dark reality. So he kind of comes in, and all he wants in life is to become a samurai. And he comes in, and there's a clan that's already there, and they're eating, and this town's been devastated by treachery and warring factions between Yakuza and samurai, but they're all gone now, and basically the clan that's sitting there kind of says, go eat down the road, there's a lady that'll feed you, and when he goes in, there's a woman hanging from the rafters. She's killed herself from poverty. Then he's standing there looking at this weird, very homely-looking chicken running around, and he's looking at him saying, I'm going to get him to eat him. And then as he's trying to attack it, as he's trying to grab the chicken to eat it, then that's when Gentry comes in. That's when Genta comes in, and it interrupts him, but then he's like, oh, sorry, you know. And he speaks very, almost, he's like a Yoda character in that he imparts knowledge, and he's very unassuming, but he's a very he was in this world. He was a very high-ranking samurai. He just became disenchanted with the whole thing when the reality of the Bushido code is you're just a murderer, and the samurai life is a treacherous one. In that, more often than not, you're setting out to kill fellow samurai. You're setting out to kill, assassinate clan leaders for no real reason other than political gain, powerful gain. Something that kind of rang true a little bit in the newest Star Wars, in that a disenchanted Jedi kind of talking about we're not on the side of good. It's just, there is no good or evil kind of thing. And while they're in this town, a group of seven samurai, not seven samurai, but seven samurai, like retainers or seven, they kill their master on orders of a different clan leader. So they've basically committed. They've turned on theirs, on their own leader, to join this more powerful clan, and then they kind of like go hide out on this mountainside. By his, he's like, okay, you do this, and then I'm gonna ride to Edo, and everything will be fine. You're not gonna be in any trouble. But he's really doing this long con where he's gonna then use his own people to kill off, he gathers a group of just kind of like low-level people that he says he's going to train and make samurai if they kill those seven, of which our hero Hanji is part of. So, also, Genta has set himself up as, like, he's not playing both sides like Yojimbo or any of those kind of things. He just kind of is doing his own thing and imparting wisdom as he goes along the way. So he becomes like this messenger, and he goes in and he tells the messenger, "Oh, they've been killed, but it's okay. So thanks." And he leaves, and then that clan leader tells Hanji to go kill Genta. Now they're not friends, but they know each other. So of course Hanji is a farmer. He's too nice of a guy. He's too real of a person to follow this code. But he's following him along. He's like, and then that's when Genta turns around. He's like, oh, he told you to kill me, right? He's like, yeah, and I'm going to. And he easily evades him, and it's kind of funny. And he's like, don't you think it's odd that they would tell you that I've done nothing other than deliver a message, and they're telling you to kill me? And Hanji still is telling the samurai line. He's like, no, that's, whatever. And he's like, I have an idea. Why don't you just say you killed me, and I'll leave? And Hanji goes, yeah, I'll do that. So, and this is the first part where you're kind of watching, you're like, oh, this is kind of a funny movie because of the way that happens. Then there's this side character who hops out, and he's just Crazy Town USA, and he's just like this, he has a knife, and he's talking about how the samurai destroyed his whole village, or it was the Yakuza destroyed the whole village, one of them, or both of them.
So now his whole life is all he wants to do is murder people. And you're like, okay, well, he's like, so I'm going to follow you, Jensen. And he's like, okay, whatever. And this now it's kind of going the back and forth where now Hanji says that he's killed them. And he's like, oh, you're really strong. So you're going to be part of this group that I'm getting together to go kill those seven that are held up on the side of this mountain. You do that and I'm going to make you a samurai. And one guy's like, no, I don't care about being a samurai. Give me money. And he's like, well, whatever. If you want money, I'll give you money. 10,000 ryu for each head. 10,000 or 10 RYO ryu. Ryo? The gold things. Whatever. Pieces of gold. So because he turns out he's trying to buy his wife back from the local brothel because she was indebted. And so that's his only motivation is money. He doesn't care about titles. And while that's going on, of course, the other clan, whose leader got murdered, is now they're forming this long battalion of 30 of their best men to go murder the guys that did that. So the seven samurai that committed this act for this guy are held up in this little, like a hunting lodge. That's how they present it, as it's like this hunting lodge on the side of a mountain. It's a really nice setting. It's a cool look. It's an old-looking building. It has the hearth in the middle, and as they leave, or they've left, and Genta's sitting there in their village where after they left, and here comes this very beautiful woman, she's due to be married to the leader of this seven group, the leader of that group that carried out the action. But the plot thickens. One of the other samurai was trying to woo her. Woo, said Strumpet, and failed. So now you have some kind of, a little bit of backbiting within the group that are now held up on this mountain lodge. And this battalion shows up with guns, archery, and swords, and horses. So there's 30 of the best guys, there's 10 archers, 10 guys with guns, because that was kind of coming around at this time. And then just the regular people, like the samurais. And this is all they're there just to kill these guys for killing the leader. You following with me? So, okay. You can see how this stew is bubbling. And it will be... what's going to happen? Who knows? So, all right, let's take a quick break and we come back. I will wrap this up and we'll find out what happens to our heroes. Will they die? Maybe? I don't know. Probably not. You never know.
How was school?
Worst day of my life. What do you think?
Let me go back in there and face the peril.
No, it's too perilous.
My duty of the night sounds as much peril as I can.
No, we've got to find the Holy Grail. Come on.
Oh, let me have just a little bit of peril.
No, doesn't help it.
Bet your...
I saw your face next to mine.
She's one of the most beautiful girls in the world. Women envy her. Men adore her. She's TV's hottest superstar. She's Farrah Fawcett. And she's something else.
But before Charlie's Angels, she was just another pretty face, an up-and-comer who'd do anything to get into the movies. And not too long ago, she made one of those X-rated movies. And now you can see the truth about Farrah Fawcett, and she's no angel. Now, come see the movie Lee Majors doesn't want you to see, the movie Farrah Fawcett's lawyers are trying to stop. Mae West, Raquel Welch, and Farrah Fawcett in Myra Breckenridge, together with Russ Meyer's classic Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. A double feature X-rated midnight movie, over 18 only.
Mm-hmm. This is a tasty burger.
Farrah Fawcett is Myra Breckenridge. Mmm, yowza. Before I go too far, I wanted to make sure you check out some of my other stuff online. I have another show here on Radio St. Pete called The Indie Circuit. That's where me and Promi talk about random dumbness and also play lots of really cool music you've never heard of. So make sure you check that out. If you can't catch it live, just go to the audio archives. You can find all of the back catalog of Asian Cult Cinema and all the Indie Circuit, which is like 170 deep. It's a lot. Or you can also go to slowrobotagogo.wordpress.com, and there I have a long, long running show that's all B movies and craziness. Boy, am I like 8 or 9 years long? Old, long. Boy, that's a long show. 9 years long. No, old. So there's a ton of content on there, and a lot of the shows are two movies per show, so it's it's hundreds of movies. So if you like B-movies, make sure you check out Slow Robot A-Go-Go. All right, now on to the show. So now things are heating up pretty good. The girl, because Genta and the girl are Genta is sitting with an old priest and playing this game of just some Japanese card game. And she's like, oh my God, well, I'm going to go save him. Because now they know that the 30 mercenaries are coming to kill him. Not mercenaries, samurai. So she takes this back route and gets there. And then she's like, oh, I'm here to let you know there's a whole bunch of guys with armaments right outside the door. And this is where, they do a lot of parodying where they're not quite that rugged group of guys that keep it together. You know, this is where they're starting to snap. Tensions are high. And one of them finds booze and he's getting drunk. And he's like, we should share everything in reference to this woman. And the leader's like, no, I'm going to kill you if you try that. So then cooler heads prevail. And at this time now, the other group of the misfit bunch that the Chamberlain sent to take the mastermind of this whole plan, sent the group he knows is going to die to kill the first group and the samurais that are there to fight the seven that are in. And basically, his plan is after whomever kills the seven is going to start turning and killing the other ones, and then he's going to burn the whole place down. The whole mountain's going to be burned down, and they're all going to die. He's trying to, like, rid himself of all of them. The ones trying to avenge the death, the ones in the cabin, and the ones he himself has sent to kill. He's a very treacherous guy. There's a different official that kind of pops in and out of the story where he's, like, always yawning and sleepy, and he's representing, like, the old guard of leaders or officials that are not doing very good. Something we know quite a bit about here in America. So it's ramping up. Every now and then, one of the crew of the seven runs out to do something valiant and gets shot down dead or gets arrows shot into him, you know. Genta goes up and tries to defuse the thing because he keeps saying throughout this whole movie, it's playing out exactly the same. So in reference to he left his samurai clan because a similar thing happened and the similar results were playing out. He literally is just saying this is the exact same thing that happened to me, which is why I'm not that thing anymore. I got the impression that he wasn't really a Yakuza either. I mean, he was a henchman for them, but I think that was more of wherever there's food, he does it just because times were tough back then. The beginning of the Shogun, when the Shogun showed up and guns showed up and samurai started to fall out of favor, I think it was very tough times historically for samurai. They had to kind of get by with however they could, and that was probably very often not quite what they were accustomed to, you know. But anyway, so now they're still held up and they're trying to break out and the group... I did forget to mention that the rogue group of samurai that were told to take their money and go spend it and at the local brothel, drink and have women, and then you'll be ready for battle and you can go fight these guys. This is where our hero, Hanji, asks for a woman that smells like earth, like dirt, kind of thing. And this is basically kind of saying, you know, he's still a farmer at heart. So it's a little bit, he's kind of betraying the samurai that he wants to be so bad at this point. And that kind of more and more builds up as the movie goes on. Now, I forget how this happens. They do capture the head because Genta keeps coming back and forth. He goes from the mountain and he goes down in the valleys. And they catch him, the head bad guy catches him, and they beat him up really bad. They're trying to make him talk, but he isn't really saying anything. But I skipped something else, I forgot. Genta actually joins the rogue group because he was helping the seven escape, And at this point, the leader's like, he catches him doing it. He's like, why are you helping these guys? And he's just like, for my personal reasons. And he's like, well, I'm going to have to kill you. And he's like, I'd rather not do that. And he's like, yeah, I guess you're right. It's just, there's a couple of terms where they make turns and where they kind of, they say, well, we could kill each other or we could not. And they both kind of go, nah, let's, I'd rather not. That's not very fun. They also make mention numerous times that the farmer is really, really, Hanji is really, really strong. And they've shown it a couple times in comical fashion. So the seven sneak out. The two, and they're trying to like negotiate their way out, but that doesn't work. Then the two camps start fighting. So at this point, Genta leaves. And he's going down to try and find, because the other guy should have been an Edo already, so they know, or the seven know that they've been had. They've been kind of backstabbed by this boss. And Genta goes back, and he gets caught, and they're like, they're beating him up really bad, and then he breaks out of jail by Hanjo, and they take him to the brothel where his new girlfriend, and they help try to patch him up, and the leader of the rogue group is also still like, I need, you know, 30 more gold coins because I have to get my wife out. All I care about is getting my wife back, and then I don't really care about anything else. That's gonna come up later. So Genta also has this thing where he starts a festival. The town starts a festival, so they start celebrating to kind of mask the stuff that's going on. And if the two factions start fighting, even though there's nothing left to fight over, and they're killing each other here and there, and then it's the ending. I'm not going to give away the ending. It's a pretty intense ending. But the very last thing is, Genta is just back kind of on this street in the rain with his hungry and poor, and here comes Hanji comes up dressed in his samurai outfit, so he's been awarded a samurai for his bravery, and he's like, so you're a samurai now, that must be pretty cool, huh? And he's like, well, yeah, it's pretty cool. And all these girls are following him, and he's like, what's this about? And he's like, well, basically the old official that was held up with, because the old official was jailed by the younger one as well with Genta back in the middle. I know. You're like, this. I know it's hard to follow the way I'm saying it because it's hard to remember the exact way this played out. It was a lot of kind of back and forth and really funny scenes, but there was also a lot of content along the way. And I know I've mixed up at least two, and I'm very sorry. Hey, live radio, what can I tell you? So basically, now he, the old official was like, well, you know, to help you guys out, he pays off all the debt so all the women are released. Because this is another part of the evil plan. Before we end this, Genta goes into the evil officer's tea room, a very small setting, because he's really beat up at this point. One of his arms is broken, and he can't walk around too good. So he takes these fire tongs and gets them sharpened, and he's held up in the official's tea room. So as the official kind of comes in, he whips one of the tongs through his hand, through his right hand. So now neither of them have the ability of their strong hand, and they do some quick sword play, and he kills the bad guy. Throughout this movie, Genta, the one who's trying to do the right thing and trying not to get in any trouble, actually kills the most people. He's also the most skilled at killing. You can tell he was very, very, very high up in the ranks because he's very skilled with arrows. He's skilled with swords. So he kills the bad guy. The town celebrates. He leaves. Hanji meets him up. Now there's a scene where Hanji kind of comes up, and then all these girls are following him in the rain. He's like, what's this about? He's like, well, the old official stuck to his word and paid off all the debts, so now they're all going home. Because, you know, it ain't much fun working in a brothel in Japan, in feudal Japan. So, the last scene is they're walking, and Genta's like, well, he takes his umbrella and he puts it over the woman of the leader who is out for money. In this, in the one scene, he gets killed. And it's really gut-wrenching because of the whole clan, you kind of were really hoping he was going to save his wife. It's a pretty touching backstory. Alas, he's murdered by somebody. That's when Hanji finally kills somebody. He runs up and kills the guy that killed the leader that was trying to get money for his wife. And he's too late, and it was like, it was very heartbreaking. There's a couple times Hanji kills somebody, and he's kind of like, ooh, I don't know if I like this too much. It's different than farm work. Anyway, so that's the end. Very funny, irreverent comedy, parody, however you want to call it. I think it's one of my favorites. It's a very, very funny movie. The characters are great. The soundtrack is powerful and slight. It's not overpowering. It's almost like one of those spaghetti westerns, like, you know, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, but obviously not that. The tone is really set by it. The editing is really incredible. Great dialogue. You know, the humor is really funny and absurd, and it makes you laugh out loud sometimes. It's a brilliant film. I would make sure, if you like the samurai sword stuff and you like to laugh, make sure you check it out, because, boy, it's one of the best out there. And I like the ones that are the grandiose style of, oh my god, the samurai code and all that kind of stuff. But this one's a good one too. Kind of doesn't take itself too seriously, and you'll laugh a lot with it. That's going to be it for this week. I think next week I might visit an often talked about subject that we haven't done yet, called the pinky violence. My name's Mal. We'll see you next week.